I want your opinion on this.
Please.
I feel like we're entering etiquette minefield season.
The holidays have a tendency to be that year after year after year.
Yes, it's like a nightmare.
So this was last year.
So it was Christmas Day 2 years ago.
I do recall a Thanksgiving meal where something had happened.
This is my Jewish aunt. She came in 1 year, instead of saying hello or Merry Christmas or good to see everybody, she said, praise be to Jesus. And my grandma went, what?
She says, like, something like, are you sure you want to wear that? Like, you look like a whore. And I immediately start crying.
My relative, who had just talked about how they didn't like Starbucks, opens a Starbucks card. So I'm mortified.
I did not recognize any dish. Any dish. Not a single dish that was in front of me was anything I had seen before.
Walked in the kitchen, and it was the bathroom and the kitchen next to each other, and there was fluid coming through the walls and through the light fixture.
She was seeing kind of like two people at once, and she invited them both to Thanksgiving.
Coming from the upstairs bathroom, and it was used fluid, you know?
And they actually went and like fought in the yard.
There was one dish that just was black. It was just black. It looked like just somebody had taken black sesame pudding, mixed some cornmeal into it, and just stuck an immersion blender all through it. And I was just like, what is this?
I literally ran straight for the closest bathroom and just started explosive diarrhea, like constant vomiting.
So there's this weird, almost like the end of The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, when there's a three-way standoff. When like they're all pointing their guns at each other.
Everyone else thought the food was delicious. Okay. And everyone was like, oh, you're not going to finish that? Well, you don't want seconds?
And then it was like some sort of like zombie psychopath movie where like one after another, everyone just fell. There were like four bathrooms in the house. So there were absolutely people outside throwing up in the bushes.
She didn't sob. It was more of just a kind of a sniffling and occasional wiping the eyes.
Did anyone acknowledge this, or just?
No. My family doesn't acknowledge things like that. We deny things and we repress.
It was horrible. It was absolutely horrendous.
Because the 6 week nightmare that is the holiday season begins this week, I figured we could celebrate with some professional help. I called Lizzie Post.
I run the Emily Post Institute with my cousin Daniel Post Senning.
The Emily Post Institute, as in Emily Post, the etiquette empress. And Lizzie is Emily's great-great-granddaughter. She is part of the Post etiquette family dynasty. She's also the co-author of the 19th edition of Emily Post's Etiquette.
It's so tough because if you think about it, like from Thanksgiving to New Year's, everybody wants to throw a holiday party of some sort, or there's travel involved, or there's family visiting. And the one thing that we've learned is that when things become more stressful, people tend to revert to rudeness more easily because their own kind of tank of generosity is running on low. And
yes.
It's ripe with all kinds of... like psychological issues too, I feel like.
I'm like already stressed. All right, so the challenge I want to put to you, this is going to be hard because you don't know me that well, but this is going to be difficult. I want you to make me the best guest in the history of the world.
I can totally do this.
I'm glad that you're confident.
I can work with you. As a really good guest, responding to a host early in the holiday season is like number one most important. Actually RSVP and then offer to contribute or help out, or use this also as a time to say, so I happen to be vegan and gluten-free, but I would be more than happy to bring a dish or plate that meets my needs. Or maybe you don't have allergies, but you could say, is there anyone at the table who has a dietary restriction I should be aware of?
Which I think is very generous. asking if other people have dietary restrictions.
I mean, you want to be number one guest. We're going to get you to number one guest
You're
status,
right.
girl.
You're right.
Like,
You're right.
this is it. those are the really, really considerate things to think of. And if your hostess or host says, don't worry about it, I just want you to show up ready to eat, then you're good to go.
You shouldn't push back on that.
No, not at all. What you can do is say, if you think of anything, please let me be your emergency phone call.
Well, okay, here's a question. What if there's like a really banging Thanksgiving happening that I'm not invited to? Is there any way for me to politely invite myself?
I love it. No, there isn't.
So I've scored the invite.
Yep.
Once I get to the house, I feel like there are some tricky situations.
So many tricky situations.
let's say it's a shoes-off house.
Oh.
What if I don't want to take off my shoes?
Then you can eat outside. can I just say that no matter where we talk about this question, it becomes the most hotly debated thing ever.
What? The shoes off?
I have had readers of various columns that we have written on this subject on, like, go off on this one. It is your home. Whatever your reasonings are for wanting shoes off or for requesting that people leave them on is really up to you, and your guests should follow those rules. Now, there are all kinds of different reasons why someone might request to leave their shoes on. The general rule, if you're able-bodied, is follow what your host would like.
What about helping? Like when I get to the Thanksgiving dinner house.
Totally.
Do I just like run to the kitchen and start chopping onions? What do I do?
Get yourself settled. Get yourself a drink, have a little hors d'oeuvre, and then go over to your host and say, oh, everything's so lovely. Is there anything I could do to help out? They also might give you a task and take it on with gusto, even if it is taking out the garbage.
You can clean my toilet. Here's the scrub brush.
I didn't get to the upstairs bathrooms. Could you do that for me? So be careful what you wish for, ask for.
Let's get into the meal part.
Okay.
What's the most polite way to refuse a dish?
Okay, so we have this really cute thing that my mom made up called the no thank you portion. As long as it's not going to make you physically sick to eat it. I would take the no thank you portion, which is just a very, it's that baby. I mean, it's that teeny tiny portion.
Like how small?
Like a small spoonful, like enough to get like a bite or two out of it. And I would try that bite because, gosh, this could be the time that you really love those mashed potatoes.
Yeah, that's an optimistic way of thinking about it.
Yeah.
What if I encounter a piece of turkey bone or gristle or something?
Yeah.
How do I get it out of my mouth and where do I put it?
Right. So there used to be a rule that said that you, whatever is lifted to your mouth with a fork is also removed from your mouth with a fork. And I would like to go on record saying that this is ridiculous and it's much more cumbersome and awkward than it is elegant or appropriate. And I used to debate this with my family for years. I was like, this is the worst advice we give. I can't believe you tell people to spit things out onto a fork.
I love how there's like family feud about little etiquette things.
It's ridiculous. I watched my parents get into it over asparagus, whether you can eat it with your fingers or whether you should eat it with a fork.
All right, here's a controversial one. What about elbows on the table?
Ah, the funny thing is that Emily actually had no problem with elbows on the table.
That's really surprising, though, because I think I grew up hearing no elbows on the table.
Oh, yeah, everybody did.
Yeah.
It was like a thing, but it wasn't an Emily Post thing.
No, this is very liberating. I'm glad.
Put those elbows on the table, girl. But they try to do it after the meal is over more.
Okay, post-meal etiquette.
Okay.
What if I'm stuck in a conversation with someone horrible? How do I get out?
Oh, my gosh. That could happen at any point during the meal.
Or any time in life.
Any time in life. Definitely letting someone know that they've been heard is one step towards getting out of a difficult conversation or an uncomfortable conversation.
Oh, interesting.
Especially when someone's doing the thing where they just keep repeating themselves and you're just like, okay, yeah, that's when you can say, oh no, I hear you on that. I can imagine that that would be a really trying experience, or what a journey you've been on. I've loved hearing about this, but I've got to admit, I have to catch up with Aunt Joan. I haven't had a chance to talk with her
yet. Just do the past tense as if it's already over.
Just move it on.
I've really enjoyed this. Goodbye.
Be explicit about it. You know, like, be like, yeah, and I'm moving on to this right now. And that lets you move on to that right now.
Okay, what if there are games after the meal? Can I not play them?
Is it bad that I wanted to say, oh, fun?
Maybe we have different styles of attending events.
We might. I think that the best thing you can do as a guest is to participate. If it's really cringeworthy, say, I love to watch, or I love to observe. I love to be a bystander.
I love to watch.
Or, oh, I'd be happy to help with the dishes right now.
Yeah. All right, here's a tough one.
Okay.
When can I not go to a family event?
Oh, anytime you want.
No.
Yeah.
No way.
Totally.
What?
Yes.
Please explain.
Mom, I wish I could this year, but unfortunately, it's just not going to happen. I'd love to Skype in or video chat in, whatever, you know what I mean? Like, to say hello to everybody, but this year is just not going to work for me.
Yeah, I mean, like, you're dealing with the guilt. Physically, obviously, you don't have to go. It's the psychological burden.
This is more like where my job crosses over into being a therapist.
Right.
And it's like, you know, it's okay to stand up for numero uno and your individual self. And you want to be a good guest. You were talking about how to be good guest number one. Well, good guest number one wants to go to the event. And if you really can't be that, if that's for whatever reason, you're too busy, you're depressed, you really just can't stand your Uncle Bob, that is okay. You absolutely don't have to go.
Do you think that if people internalized that advice, that there would be any Thanksgivings at all?
Yes. I think there would be tons of them. It's my favorite holiday. I would totally be hosting the last Thanksgiving.
Hopefully, Lizzie's advice will help you mood stabilize your holiday. But should things go off the rails, we also have some tips for you from people who learned the hard way.
If we're looking for an etiquette lesson, it's don't tell your Jewish mother you've converted to Christianity on Christmas.
Yeah, you shouldn't put the turkey back together while people are still eating. Like, you shouldn't be grabbing bones. And maybe you shouldn't be taking, like, animal carcasses on long drives.
Based on my experience, I don't think that you should comment on anyone's appearance.
If your mom is crying softly through the entire meal, what's the proper etiquette for that situation?
There again, you don't talk about it. You just pretend that it's not happening, and you bring up maybe politics. Bring politics up. You know, that's always a good one. Bring up something that's worse, and see if that kind of distracts everyone. And maybe you'll have everybody crying at some point. That might be a way to deal with that one.
The best thing to do when you find yourself in a situation where the food just isn't meeting your standards, right? Take the plate, eat as much as you can without thinking about it too hard, smile graciously, thank everybody profusely, and then, like, hit some fast food later that night.
Thank you, Mike Drucker, Ashley Cleek, Sonia Hennett, Wes Reeves, Brittany Luce, Chris Neary, and Glynis O'Leary for sharing your holiday nightmares with us. And you know what? No matter what you encounter this holiday season, do not forget the thank you note.
You know, I mean, this show is about little things, right? And those little things make a difference. Three little simple lines. Dear Carrie, I had such an amazing time at Thanksgiving with you this year. I really, really hope that you and the rest of family had a great rest of the holiday weekend together. Thanks for making mine so special. Love, Lizzie.
I'm just going to copy that down and just send it out.
Do it.
After the break, another critical piece of information to complete your holiday meal. A fresh look at nature's laxative. Thank you. Okay, great. You have all the tools you need to be the best guest in the history of the world. But we also wanted to make sure that you have something to talk about. So this is for that moment when you're groping around for anything to say at the holiday party or the family event. We have you covered. Here's your topic. It came in through the helpline. It's food related, safe zone, and it's from a family in Denver.
Thank you for calling the Every Little Thing helpline. ELT is here to answer your pressing factual questions. Please note in your message if this is a factual emergency.
Every Little Thing team, my family and I have an ongoing argument about prune juice and what it's made of and how it's made and what its deal is. Now, part of the reason I wanted to ask the Every Little Thing team is because I'm terrified to Google this. I'm so scared that there's not going to be an interesting story, or even worse, it's going to be boring. So if you could please help me, that would be great.
Hello.
Hi, Kimberly. This is Flora from ELT.
Nice to meet you.
I have good news.
What's that?
It's not boring.
Oh, yay. Oh, best news I've heard all day.
Okay, before we get to the answer, do you drink a lot of prune juice?
No, not at all. I mean, I feel like it's a gross drink, right? Like, I've never had it. Like, when you talk about prune juice, most people are going to have, like, ew, gross, prune juice. And no, it has something to do with incontinence and poop, right?
Okay, so you don't drink it. But you also said that this was a long-standing question in your family. So how did you get to this question?
So I remember in the middle of a conversation with my mother suddenly was like, what's the deal with prune juice? And I was like, I don't understand the question. She's like, no, think about it. Like, prunes are dried plums. So therefore, there's no water. Mind blown.
You're totally right. This is paradoxical and strange.
Also, plums are delicious and juicy. And why would you ruin it by drying them out? I think that this question has just been just palling around this year. Like, we've just been thinking about it like all of 2017. Maybe
2017 is the year of prune juice for your family?
Right now, yes. Let me preface and say, like, we talk about other things. Like, this isn't like, hey, Mom, another thought about prune juice. This is like, you know, two drinks into dinner.
That's when the prune conversation gets going.
Yes, exactly. More stories about what we think prune juice, how it came about.
So what are some of these stories? Like, what are some of the elaborate stories that you've come up with about the origin of prune juice or how prune juice is made?
Right. So, like, I can only imagine that it's like World War II. Like, our boys are overseas. Food shortage is like a real problem over there. Like, getting, and there's this one farmer. He's been farming this land for generations. You know, he's just one of a long line. We're gonna take our fruits and we're gonna dry them and we're gonna save our boys. Oh, and I should say too, like, he has sons who are fighting. You know what I mean? Like, it's the whole program. He's like, Velma, his wife, Velma.
Velma.
It's discovered that his storage facilities have this like massive leak, and so all of the dried plums are now in this wet, juicy glop. And he notices that like his animals are like happier. Because they're, like, regular. Like, they're pooping regular. I mean, it's a hero story, really.
Okay, so that's detailed. It also makes me really excited to tell you what we found.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Okay, let's get to it. So part one of your question was, how do you go from a dried prune to a juice? That is easy. Here's the process. Fresh plums are picked. They go into giant dehydrating tunnels. Mm-hmm. They're dried out. Chemical changes happen. The flavor changes. They go from plummy to pruney. And then the juicing begins. So here's prune farmer Richard Taylor.
How you make prune juice? The dried prune, put it in a big tank
full of hot water, and you cook it all night, and you stir it, and all the pits fall out, and you have this slurry.
Slurry.
Yes, I too want to call attention to the word slurry, because it's so unappetizing, and everyone used it. So the prune slurry goes into a decanter, and the centrifugal force takes off the skin.
Okay.
And from there, it goes into a tank, usually in a tank, then bottled, and that's how you get prune juice. You literally cook the dried prune.
Yeah, so it's like the opposite of how every juice is made.
Yeah.
As opposed to squeezing the water out,
yes.
You squeeze water in.
Yes.
Okay, so that was the answer to question one. On to question two, the origin of prune juice. That's where we have a real yarn. And to help me tell the story, I want to introduce you to Christian Emblard, the number one prune person in the world.
My title in English is General Secretary of IPA, International Prune Association.
Christian is the global titan of prunes.
There's someone who's a global titan of prunes. This makes me so happy.
So the human-prune relationship goes back millennia. There's this great history. The plum tree migrated from China via the Silk Road. Prunes were spread around the Mediterranean by the Romans. And there's one thing about prunes that really helps them travel the world.
Sailor men appreciated prunes because it was the only means they had to keep vitamin C on the boats.
Really?
So this food is a food of traveling people.
Okay, so they're like ship snacks. Moving forward, there is one variety in particular that rises to the top.
From the 19th century on, the French variety became the world standard.
Why? Why is the French variety so good?
Because it was technically good, and for taste, it was the best.
Isn't that subjective?
No. Yes, taste is subjective. But there are common appreciations on what taste is good and not good.
By the way, this, like, I'm sure goes without saying, Christian is French.
Yeah, of course the French prune is the best.
Of course it is. Of course it is. So this variety is the variety that came to California during the gold rush with a French guy.
Smart man.
And back to your original question, we also get, soon after, the origin of prune juice.
This is exciting.
All right, so here's what you have to know. The early American prunes were very, very dry. They were like pieces of leather, like eating a shoe.
Ugh, gross.
They had to come up with a workaround. So what consumers did is that they would soak their prunes overnight in water or brandy to soften them up.
It's the consumers.
The people invented prune juice.
Of course they did. Go proletariat, man. Proletariat prune juice.
But then the man had to come in the form of Sunsweet Growers, which is actually an agricultural cooperative. So Sunsweet sold the first commercial prune juice in 1932, and it was marketed as a health drink, which is also how prunes were marketed. And this may explain why you associate both of them with poop.
In California, at the beginning of the big production, there was promotion of prunes by its aptitude to facilitate transit.
When you say transit, you mean bowel transit?
Yes.
Okay.
And so it's kind of a medicine.
It's marketed as this like elixir, this medicine, not something that you would choose to drink for fun.
I mean, yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh.
But guess what? That's not how it's marketed in France.
We never talk about that. Never communicate about that. And we just communicate about the fun, about the taste. So this is why the consumption per capita in France is the highest in the world, because many people who don't have any health problems eat prunes.
He used the word fun.
I mean, I asked him, what's the alternate marketing of prunes? Like, if you, like, what's the sexy version? And he, first of all, was like, that is a weird question.
Oh, what a question.
But he said the flavor of prunes is super special because prunes are allowed to ripen on the tree rather than being picked underripe and ripening in a grocery store, which is what most of our fruit is like.
So they have all their aromas and qualities of a ripe fruit. This is the specificity of that fruit, which makes it so good.
Okay, I have some prune juice here on my end, and I asked you to get some too, since you had never had any. And I figured, like, we could try it for the first time together here over the phone. Do you have yours ready?
I do.
All right, I'm going to grab my prune juice glass. I'm going to give it a swirl because there is some sediment on the bottom.
Slurry.
And I think we should do a wine tasting version of this.
Okay, yeah.
I'm just going to smell it first.
Okay, I'm smelling.
Wow, powerful.
Yeah, it's very powerful.
Okay, I'm going to cheers you.
Okay. You can taste how, like, ripe it was.
I also feel like the texture is quite unusual.
Yes, yes. It's almost oily.
It definitely has body.
Yeah, it's a drink for those with a mature soul.
And palate.
Cheers.
Happy Thanksgiving. Oh, and if you have any family conspiracy theories that you want us to look into, you know, give us a ring. 347-464-9626. And if you're up for it, I would like to deputize all listeners to invade the space of all of your family and friends this weekend, take their phones while they're captive and stuck at a table, and download Every Little Thing. Help us get the word out about the show. Have a great holiday weekend. See you in a couple weeks.
Every Little Thing was made by Flora Lichtman, Catherine Wells, Christine Driscoll, Phoebe Flanagan, and Devin Taylor, with help from Nicole Pasulka and Doug Barron. Dara Hirsch scored and mixed this episode. Happy holidays, Every Little Thing listeners. Goodbye.